Welcome to Voices from the Frontline segment of the 4 o'clock Public Affairs Hour on KPFK Radio, 90.7 FM in Los Angeles, 98.7 FM in Santa Barbara, and streaming on the web for the world at www.kpfk.org. My name is Manuel Criollo, and I'm your host for today. In early September, the Albuquerque Public School Board narrowly approved a plan to arm school officers and create an independent school police department. This decision follows a trend of a rapid increase in the presence of armed school police officers in public schools throughout the country, including here in Los Angeles. We'll be joined by Monica Cordova, youth coordinator of the Southwest Organizing Project, SWAP, who led a campaign in Albuquerque to defeat the proposal. Our second segment is going to be about a little bit over a year ago when seven young black lesbians from New Jersey were assaulted with sexist and homophobic attacks on a night out in New York's West Village. The women tried to defend themselves, a fight broke out, and the women were all arrested. In June, four of the women were given prison sentences ranging from 3.5 to 11 years. Joining us to discuss the current fight to free these women, now known as the New Jersey Four, is Bran Fenner, co-director of Fierce, a trans and queer youth of color organizing project based in New York City. And lastly, we'll end the, as you know, Indigenous Resistance Day is coming soon, October 12th, for all the other folks known as Columbus Day, to honor and discuss the long legacy and continuing resistance of Indigenous people in the Americas. We're joined today by Roxanne Dunbar Ortiz, author and longtime activist in the American Indian Movement. So stay tuned. We'll be right back. Less than a month ago, the Albuquerque Public School Board voted 4-3 in favor of a plan to arm school officers and create an independent school police department. The decision came after months of organizing to defeat the proposal led by the Southwest Organizing Project, SWAP. We are joined right now by Monica Cordova, youth coordinator with SWAP. Good to have you on the show, Monica.
Oh, thank you. Glad to be here.
Well, Monica, before we get into the actual vote and, you know, why this is such a bad move, why don't you describe for folks who are here in Los Angeles the Albuquerque public school system and the type of the work that you guys have done over the years in Albuquerque?
So Albuquerque, we have one school district, and we have about 11 high schools. And our school board, we have seven school board members who are elected, and we have been for, you know, SWAP has been for the past 5 or 6 years continually having to work on this guns in schools issue because it seems to continually come up after such things as Columbine and now after Virginia Tech. Mm-hmm. And so it's just really holding our elected officials accountable and responsive to the community.
So let's talk about what happened, which was Albuquerque Public School Board voted to arm school officers and obviously create an independent school police department. Here in Los Angeles, we have something very similar. It's called the Los Angeles School Police Department. It has over 318 police officers who are here in Los Angeles. But I think one of the important things to think about this, in particular, as you were saying, even though it's from the school department and the powers to be, they describe it as an issue of safety. In reality, the biggest fear for many of us is the question, which I'm assuming is the same point for you guys, mm-hmm. is the issue of the criminalizing of young people and, mm-hmm. and what role that can play.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, we definitely have been, as a grassroots community-based organization whose youth component has focused on fighting anti-youth policies within our city that seem to come up every month. It seems to be something mm-hmm. new. The issue coming up again this year for the school board to arm, first it was, you know, to arm the current security guards, and then it flipped into actually creating a full-fledged police force. And it does. They spin it in the media and in meetings and when they're talking to their constituents, like, it's about safety. And at the end of the day, for the communities that are most affected by these kind of policy changes, it doesn't make them feel any safer. And it creates an environment and an atmosphere where they actually feel less safe and more fear, have more fear of the officers. and of the fact that they're going to be targeted or threatened, or, you know, the power dynamics that creates. It's just a very unhealthy situation for our young people to be in particular our young people of color.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think in relationship to this, I've gotten a chance to go out to Albuquerque, and you think about the long history of colonization, essentially in Albuquerque, and how this will play out. Given when we look at the numbers of people in prison in this country, we have over 2.3 million of them in jail, in prisons and jails, 1 million of them which are African American, but 500,000 which are Chicanos and Latinos, who I'm assuming is the vast majority of folks out in Albuquerque.
Yeah, definitely. And part of their step in creating this police force was they put together this safety commission, and the school board did, to look into the issue of school safety and give a recommendation. And the recommendation was to create this armed police force. And they didn't really look at safety holistically. You know, what we were saying was, you know, safe schools are gun-free. And you need to look at safety in a comprehensive way. You need to look at the prevention and intervention. And, you know, beyond that, the safety commission was not comprised or representative of the community. There weren't, you know, working class people of color. We have a huge indigenous population. They had no representation from the indigenous community or the black community. It was just grossly, grossly unrealistically representing our community. And then once we brought that to our attention and tried to get on it, we got shut down. And so it was, when we look at that, you know, when you talk about, like, the history of colonization and all of that, how it impacts our schools, New Mexico students are the least likely to succeed in the nation. And yet we have a school board who is, instead of looking at strengthening the educational system to build a stronger foundation for our young people, they're looking at investing upwards of $2 million, which are startup costs, to create a police force, which then further criminalizes our young people and gets back to the whole pipeline to jail, and then gives them, you know, two options, jail or prison. I mean, you know, jail or the military.
Mm-hmm. We obviously, here in Los Angeles, we're on the verge of launching one of our own campaigns around this issue, around the schools as a pipeline. And in it, you know, I've had a chance at least to talk to people in Denver, talk to people in different parts of the country, where in Oakland, where this issue is really real. What's prevented in some ways from Albuquerque even having that? Has it been the level of organization out in Albuquerque, or has this also translated in some ways? There's already certain social policies inside the Albuquerque Police Department that's already targeted young folks of color.
And so what's prevented, like, it happening before up until this point?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, you know, we organized really strongly around keeping our schools gun-free, and that means, you know, not having security guards or full-fledged police officers on campus with weapons. And back in 2001, when we organized around it, it was just mass mobilization of communities, voicing our opinion, of course, getting in the media and making it a really big issue, which we did all of the same strategies and tactics this time. You know, we had a really solid strategy, understood the relationships, the power, the what's influencing what, and at the end of the day, the vote just didn't land in our favor. And so what it really came down to for us was the fact that there's a little bit of an east-west divide in our city, where a lot of the working-class folks of color are more on the west side or in the valleys, and the non-people of color that have a higher income level are going to be in the Heights and on the east side. And so the Heights, east side school board members outnumber us. So when the votes came down, it really came down 3-4. The three on the west side voted against the policy, and the four on the east side voted for it. And so it was a difficult lesson learned for a lot of our young people.
And do you feel that in some ways what sort of transpired here in this vote is the same type of policies that in some ways the city has also attempted to push for?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, the city definitely has a huge influence on this. You know, the city has pushed policies, actually at one point put a curfew in place. And, you know, thank God the ACLU jumped on that and it was shot down. But, you know, there's the gang unit, there's the party patrol, there's the ban on cruising. There was an attempt to ban all age shows. I mean, it's been, like, in our city government, like, very consecutive attempts to criminalize young people, whereas instead of, like, proactively spending money on engaging young people in a positive way, they're just taking the total opposite end of it. And then that connects to this because the chair of our safety commission was one of the city councilors who proposes some not so great legislation within our city council sometimes. And the mayor also had one of his right-hand men on the safety commission. So they definitely interplay with each other and kind of bounce off of each other and set the ground for stuff like this to get pushed forward.
What has been some of the challenges for you? I'm assuming, you know, when we're out in the community, while we don't think there's one monolithic, unified voice in the community, in other words, often, you know, people would say people want more police, people are worried about safety. But in my view, the community is very split. There's one particular side of the community that obviously does want safety. And yet there's also a very strong voice talking about, I'm assuming in a place like Albuquerque, where the tensions between races, particularly the colonization of the U.S. Toward Chicanos and the history of resistance there. How has it been, the engagement with people on this question? Because I'm assuming when you go out on the streets and or on the schools even, when you talk to youth, there's been some level of challenge, or what's been the reaction from folks out there?
Actually, like the majority of our, you know, of us, you know, going out to the schools and talking to students. Now, granted, we weren't allowed on school campuses, but, you know, we talked to them after school. We actually had very few students that were for it because, you know, currently their security guards have pepper spray, and so they're experiencing the excessive use of pepper spray on a daily basis, and so they're, like, kind of freaked out about, you know, whether or not they're going to get guns and how that's going to affect them. And yeah, so most of the students we talked to were, like, you know, totally against it, like, you know, started writing letters to their school board members, really, really got engaged in this. But I think where we came into difficulty was that, you know, when we start posting blogs or challenging them around the race class issues and how this affects different people, there's almost like turning, you know, wanting to turn a blind eye, like it doesn't exist. And which is kind of, for folks who work in the community and who see it every day and understand that, like, it's a huge factor and impacts us on a daily basis. To go to a school board member and say those kind of things, and then the school board member having school members shaking their heads at you like racism still doesn't exist anymore, is pretty absurd. And so that was a huge challenge when we're putting out those kind of analysis of the situation and saying that this isn't just about safety, and this is about how it's going to affect our community at large. And, you know, we had some school board members that were like on point, that were like, I won't vote for it now, I won't vote for it in 10 years because that's not a positive thing for my community, and I've talked to them. But, you know, we had some other ones that were just refusing to recognize that those kind of issues even exist in our community. Mm-hmm. And so that was, like, a really huge challenge. There was just those, like, total, like, pro-gun advocates that were, you know, the police officers, the sheriff's department, the, you know, security guards, those kind of folks that were, you know, out there in full force saying that we need our guns. Mm-hmm.
How have you guys related to the issue of the Gen 6? And that's also so appropriate to this set of discussion, right? Where, again, what could be under the name of zero tolerance that most schools have now adopted, you see the excessive use of the law and the excessive use of pretty much a criminal injustice system. How have you guys been able to make any links to that? And where do you think you guys are going to go after this?
It was like a huge reality check for our young people in regards to, like, understanding the system in which, like, they're trying to create change within. And that, and in regards to Gen 6, the kind of, like, oppression and struggles that they're dealing with here, you know, are happening across the country and aren't exclusive to Albuquerque. I think sometimes it's easy to get caught up in, like, our city's so, the policies are so bad and, you know, things are so messed up. And but, you know, it's really, really scary when they realize that it's happening everywhere else. Mm-hmm. And so for us, our next steps are to, they passed it. They were advised not to pass it, even by their lawyer, because they said it wasn't legal. So they're waiting for a ruling from their attorney general to find out if they even have legal standing to create a police force. And then if they don't, from there, they're going to go to legislature. So the state legislature. So we're currently, like, looking at legal ends, you know, and what legal action we can take within that. But beyond that, really just pushing what we've said all along, which is the fact that, again, like, our students are the least likely to succeed in the country, and we got to start focusing on creating a strong foundation for their future and investing them in positive ways. And looking, when it comes to safety, looking into prevention and intervention programs that are comprehensive, school-based health centers that provide, you know, address students' needs, conflict management and resolution in a nonviolent way programs, just, you know, several things that, like, could be focused on besides spending all of this money on a police force, you know, and really reinvesting in our students who we're currently failing.
Well, that's great, Monica. I've been talking to Monica Cordova. She's youth coordinator with the Southwest Organizing Project, SWOP, in Albuquerque, New Mexico. If people want to get a hold of SWOP or also a website, it'd be great for you to give it to folks right now.
Sure. SWOP's website is www.swop.net, SWOP.net. Folks can always contact me directly if they need more information, and my email is Monica, M-O-N-I-C-A, @ SWOP.net.
Well, thank you, Monica, and we'll be right back with our next guest, Bran Fenner, on the struggle to free the New Jersey 4.